Yeah. That was a. Yeah, thank you for the Bruce and the organizers the invitation to the speaker. Many years ago, I actually remember, after John's talk, I was in David Lewis, then the vice chair of pathology at MGH. Tell me the same story, what John telling me. Now he's a vice chair, I understand why. So good luck to him, really. It's about the pathological infrastructure, it's really an issue. And interesting, another comment I just want to make is, John mentioning the leveraging IT in pathology department. In radiology department, it's reverse. We took over IT. Basically, we want a complete control of informatics because informatics is part of way we increase the productivity and workflow. And that's a very different philosophy. And that's the reason you can see radiologists have a huge informatics component. Interesting point. But today I'm talking something very different. I'm from Methodist. I have both appointments in radiology and pathology. And when I saw Bruce send me something, this is the title, I call him up. I never know what it is. Basically, he said, what the heck it is? It sounds very complicated. So basically, I talking over the phone, and he wants to say that nowadays, we are seeing a lot of so-called biomarkers, serum biomarkers in the market. Basically, after all the basic genomic research, and now the vendors start pushing it into the market, someone in the hospital side will take over the clinical genomics, clinical proteomics, the issue, right? Either pathology department or department of medicine, someone will somehow take it over. The question is, a lot of people not even know what it is, really, one issue. Second issue is, in this genomic proteomic stuff, algorithms, the computation algorithms actually becoming a very critical component to interpret the result. It's more than eyeballing it. So have to understand what are the process going through this, using this type of system, what are the major steps involved, and what are the pitfalls they are. So I think my talk is, instead of talking about overall the interaction between radiology and pathology, we can talk for nights and days. That's not a problem over a beer or something. But I'd like to focus just one thing in this talk about the serum biomarkers from proteomics area. And what's the role of computation algorithms? How come they're so important? And I also want to mention, actually, that's my personal view. I think the current way of doing proteomics has a lot of problems, and I will show you why, if data support you. And I would like to introduce some new angle, and that's the angle that, interesting, is that in vivo imaging can help to validating the proteomic biomarkers. And pretty much is essence of my talk, just one thing. So about clinical proteomics, what sort of algorithms are involved? I promise there's no mathematics, but at least you need to learn the terms. Because sooner or later, your vendor come to you and throw the term to you. You better understand what they're talking about. This is the purpose of my talk. And in terms of proteomics, the common technique, there are three things. Everybody, a lot of us during the graduate school days, we do 2D gels. It's nothing really new, right? We are still doing that, even today. So 2D gel analysis. And the difference is the last 10, 15 years, this is a high throughput automation going on. Now you can do mass spectroscopy in high throughput. You can generate gazillions of data very quickly, data points. And not even able to eyeball it right now, this is the issue. So mass spec become a very important component on that part. And then also the other angle is the protein array, basically is, after you identify cell protein, you can using protein array to validate some of the marker. So these are the relatively new two things, mass spec and protein array analysis coming into the scene. So think about the auto, if you look at the mass spec proteomics, this is pretty much a summary, let me use this pointer. This is the summary of the flow, basically. You prepare the serum, and using, so sometimes depend, if you're in a farmers, they have this high content, high throughput robotic, automatic pick it up and do it very fast. Especially, in fact, in the drug screening, that's why they are very heavily used. Basically, your specimen, you have all kind of process. And then you go through the mass spec to generate the data itself. You can use cell D, multi, or different type of techniques. And after you generate data, there's a key part. It's a whole bunch of bioinformatics and statistic algorithm need to apply to interplay. I will show you the steps involved. It's not just the traditional, just simple statistic involved to understand this data. And after that, you need to validate. In immunoassay, the different type of validations, and then you hopefully you can get some good marker and diagnoses. Pretty much this is the flow of so-called the proteomic markers. And if you compare the different proteomic markers techniques, this is the 2D gel. They are not necessarily the same, but they are in a different stage in the workflow, as I mentioned. Some pros and cons process itself. And there's no absolutely right or wrong, right? And the cost is all expensive. This is pretty much consistent, I can tell you that. And is it necessary that way? I don't know yet, but currently I can tell you that it's relatively all of them are very, very expensive. Oh, how come I don't see anything here? Oh, too bad. I missed this one. Don't worry. Just imagine. Just imagine. Basically, it's a whole bunch of plot of the vendor will sell you, depend on your budget. They sell you different type of machines. That's all it is. And you go ranging for $100,000 to $1 million. And this is the range of the machine that you have. I'm not using Apple, though I shouldn't. Normally, it's only happening at Apple. Now, in terms of specimen preparation in the proteomic side, we always standard is using blood. And my fundamental question is this the best place to look? Because we know that there's extraordinary dynamic range in the blood proteins. And when you want to prepare it, the blood sample, you know depletion of a lot of abundant plasma protein, right? When you deplete those things, you may actually get rid of some lower compound at the same time. This is also the issue you are involved. And also because we are in the era of personalized medicine, everybody talk about it. The environmental factor, i.e. the genetic polymorphism, general age, all these are coming into place when you do this type of biomarker analysis. And we have not been really catered for it. And the process itself is still very, lab dependent at the moment. It's not really fully automated. So you have a environmental factor variation and also experimental factor variations. And the depletion of the plasma proteins has some risk. Dynamic range of the blood proteins. It sounds very negative about proteomic. But anyway, this is what you are facing against applying these techniques today. Okay? And potetum, this is the string of the protein together. This is the technique basically applying the shotgun genomic, apply into the shotgun proteomic. You break it down and then put them together, put the protein together. The problem is, a lot of them are really black magic, if you look into that. A lot of guessing work. So that means that there are a lot of errors by the time you come out. So validation becomes a very critical component in proteomic biomarkers. So when vendors say that they have this solution, come out potetum solutions, ask them what's their reliability and accuracy rate. They should give it to you. So now I want to go through individual step. Now we generate some data, right? Users prepare some specimen and generate tons of nice data points, thousands, millions of them. And what do we do with them? First of all, you should understand, the data itself are very noisy. They are not very clean data. So you need to do a lot of process to clean up the cleansed data in the form that you can do something about it. And that's what all the mathematics get involved in here. And this example, one of them is very standard, is the so-called baseline removal. Basically, you want to get rid of the baseline such that you can talk about the bias of it, get rid of the bias. And the first step for any proteomic analysis is a baseline removal algorithm. And surprisingly, actually, I looked at a lot of vendors providing proteomic machines. Very few of them actually mentioned that. It's very surprising, I don't know why. And I don't know how they validate it. Because what they have is garbage in, garbage out. This is the first step. If you don't get a baseline, your error is getting very big, basically. The second part, of course, is a normalization, right? Normalize it. Don't even worry about the mass. If you're interested in mass, you can go to the website or all the references point. But these are the steps. The second step, you apply some algorithm to normalize your spectrum. So you can talk about the same thing, apple to apple, when you compare to different labs. And the third part is called deloising. And you can see this is the spectra. If I zoom it up, this is the noise you are seeing here. Actually, you can zoom further up. And the deloising, basically, you want to smoothen the curve such that it becomes something. This is a smoother curve, you can see here. Something you can do, apply some spectra analysis into it. If you use, without deloising, if you look at these things, no way you can apply anything to it. It's just a guessing work. So it's another step. And the last step, after you basically cleanse the data, make it in a well-behaved form, curved-like, and then you basically want to identify the peaks, the peptide peaks, right? And there are many approaches you can apply, and a lot of vendor machine can provide you this type of solution, but they don't provide you is a zoom-in error. Basically, this process almost like radiology right now, or pathology, look at the slides, just eyeballing it. They provide you some sort of software you can eyeball the area and zoom in up looking better. The automation is required. Right now, it's not existent. At least the one provider is not very good at all. And our group had developed a couple of algorithms. Of course, you don't see it. Believe me, it's very good. It published. So just remember the name, okay? I should have tested already. Yeah, this is another one. Sorry. So, and after you identify peaks, the next step is really good, align the peaks together. So you understand which peptide they're falling to. That's the steps you want to go through. And of course, then after you identify the peaks and your whole bunch of research, you want to identify, the last step is really identify the biomarkers, right? Identify the features to select the biomarkers. There are a whole bunch of statistical tests available, T-test, F-test, and some more sophisticated algorithm, like genetic algorithm or random forest, whatever. You can ask your favorite biostatisticians. They can give a whole bunch of names. But remember, this step only done after you have done all these early on steps I mentioned to you. That means you clean the data, you deloise the data, you avoid the bias, you normalize the data. Otherwise, this step doesn't make any sense. The problem, a lot of people directly apply the statistic result into the mass spec data on this area and generate a lot of false positive, then it's not worth actually even do experiment. So every step is important. The sequence is important. Of course, this can't see anything. But it's all right. It works, I think. The next step is classification. There's a list of names. Just remember the name. Don't worry about mathematics. And most likely, I would imagine in future is when the machine come along, they have a whole bunch of library name, and then which one someone had to pick. Say, I want to use this support vector machine to classify it. Then you apply this support vector machine. And a guy using decision tree, neural network, all this. You can choose and pick up which one is the best. These are the common ones that come with the package. And then it's a protein pattern identification, the algorithms. Earlier I say it. You identify this from the gel. You split the thing into the fragment, 5 to 10 amino acid, and determine using mass spectroscopy to determine the mass. And then from the database and all this approach, determine the amino acid sequence and identify the protein. All this process, this is the really for you, for sounds like black magic, but this is happening right now today. And this how the part done is really a lot of bioinformatics algorithm at the end, make it works and compose something here. But also at the same time means that the reliability, the algorithm. Algorithm is nothing, it's not magic. It's just a step or step doing certain thing, except you do it on a computer. Computer is a gazillion faster than my brain in calculation. That's the reason it looks like it's magic. But it's just a step or step of picking things. It's important for you to understand sometime how they turn, what sort of assumption they make in calculating, in putting all the peptide together to claim a protein. they should be able to give you an answer in a simple, naive way, right? I mean, my son keep on saying that if I cannot explain the mathematics to him, what I'm doing to him, basically I don't know what I'm doing, which is certainly true in a certain sense. So it's the same thing on this area. So what's the problem of mass spec proteomic? I just focus on mass spec proteomic. There are many other type of proteomic. The reason I focus on mass spec because it's hot. It's the one you can see a lot of vendor claiming a lot of biomarkers in the market, a lot of machine pushing to the clinics, want to apply in the human blood and doing the diagnostic test. And the problem is, as I say, this is a lot of diverse strategies. There are many choices you can choose from in terms of algorithm, in terms of parameters. Right, I'll give you a whole bunch of lists of the name, just a name. Think about even each name has variation within among themselves. So you have a multi-dimensional space. You have multiple algorithms, you have multiple parameters, and you need to figure out what's the most optimized for you. It's an issue. Because of that, you have inconsistent and often irreproducible results because using different methods, and this is a reality. That means that result done in one lab using the same machine, even using the same machine, but under different preparation, different specimen, may not be reproducible, the result. And feature selection is a NP-hard problem. NP-hard is a mathematical term, means non-deterministic polynomial. It doesn't make any sense to you, but what you mean is experiential. The problem of space is experiential, polynomial space. That means the data point, when you increase, it just grow up very fast. And it's a very difficult issue. And classifications, depending on which model you select, which parameters you choose, and a lot of time they have overfitting problem when you want to smooth the curve. And different from genomics, proteomics, no matter what you say, is not high throughput. Although a lot of vendors, they claim it's high throughput. The only high throughput is a part that generates a whole bunch of signals. When you want to pick them together, it's not high throughput. The reason is, in the shotgun genomic, you can amplify. You can using RT-PCA, you can amplify. No way you can amplify protein. I wish we could. There would be a next Nobel Prize for you. But anyway, right now, until the next Nobel Prize in that area occurred, right now it's not high throughput. It's a very slow process. Depends how accurate you want to do your proteomics. Sometimes even do a sample, take you 2-3 days. To do well in the good machines. That's what it is. So bear in mind. So these are the issues we are facing in the current mass spec proteomics. And I bet a lot of people want to sell the machine, may not even want to bother to mention it. Right? At least you should understand this is the issue. Validate, because it's so noisy, so inconsistency. Therefore, validation becomes very important. You want to know whether what you generate is correct. So one thing is one approach is validation why immunoparticipation is one approach. Another approach is, as I mentioned, well, you can't see it, but it's all right. It's protein array I mentioned earlier on. Basically, you have a defined antibody. You know exactly the antibody and put your specimen into it. If you respond, you know it is. This is a protein array approach. The other one is a tissue array. These are the common techniques to validate your mass spec outcomes. So it's important when you generate the data, you also need to do QC on this using this type of validation. And of course, if you are really nowadays in the nanomedicine, then people like to say call it nanoparticles, which is no different for sugar protein array in a different form, in a way. So just using nanoparticles as a substrate to identify your markers. So what's the problem after all? I mentioned I'm telling the bad news instead of good news. But anyway, this science, right? It will tell you what it is. The issue, we all know that this is just like making drugs. In the beginning, you have a lot of a choice. But when you go through the pipeline, end up is very nettled. It's a variable, right? This is exactly in the case in the biomarker business. You generate thousands of biomarkers in the beginning. Every step you go through in cleaning up, eventually you get very few. And the cost is also associated with each one. It's a very interesting example. And this is the problem, right? The bottleneck issue. So verification and bottleneck is important in biomarker. Now, this may not be very pleasant, but just want to show you this is a real data coming out. A lot of people are about a biomarker using proteomic. If you track what happened in the past 14 years or 12 years, this is the data point you have. And basically, you are bound to one biomarker per year approved by FDA. It's very productive, isn't it? And I have another slide I didn't show you. If you do a PubMed, try biomarker, you get a trend like this going up in the papers. And it's at a range of about 40,000 per year. So 40,000 papers per year, we generate one biomarker. That's what we have. So what that means that is somehow the paradigm has some mistakes. Something's wrong there. That means the way we're doing, it's easy to say one or two years. When you offer a long period of time, the result is not productive. Something's wrong in this field. So we'll look into that area. And FDA, if you're interested, you can look at the FDA Critical Path Initiative. They have a report talking about this particular area on this pipeline problem in the biomarkers. You can get it from FDA website. And this is another data point. It's very easy with this data point. When people give you millions of data points, this is the end result. So the biomarker, even approved by FDA, has nothing to do with proteomics. So right now, so far, it's zero. But and again, this is every new technology. You know, it takes time. And we're just struggling trying to figure out how to make it more consistent across, such that over time, you'll see it. We still believe that this is a very good technology. It will get to that stage. But this is the current state of the art. And what's the major barrier for this in vitro testing using proteomic? And sourcing the new biomarker, and the process is insufficient, inefficient. Verification is a lacking, is an issue. And reality is we don't really have a very solid theory about it. We just really like Wild West right now. We just try it, empirical, get something done and see what happens. I think as science progress, it's fine. We're tinkering in the beginning, and sooner or later, we need to come to stage, we need to rationalize the whole process and identify which process we should work with, which process doesn't work. And multiplexing panels, that means that, what that means is, what according to Bruce is, we understand there's no single biomarker. Everybody looking for silver bullet. So one target, one drug. We know it doesn't work. One gene, one disease doesn't work. Likewise, for biomarker, it's not just one biomarker for one thing. Likely, the way we look at it is a multiple, a panel of biomarker. And then just like think about as an analogy, we like internet. Think about your web, internet. Internet is a whole bunch of nodes connecting each other in a very complicated way. Right, they have major cluster, they have small cluster, millions of computers all connected. And our human body, if you think about pathway, is the same thing, right? So if I want to lock down the internet, I don't lock down one node, one big node, right? But if I want to lock down certain disease area, say a certain region in Texas, actually only about three or four major cluster nodes. If I lock it down, the whole area collapses. Just like our human body, the pathway, there are many redundancies being built. That's how we are. That's the reason we're being able to survive today. Because something's wrong, we go around it. Our body built that way. But also in the case of disease. So when you have single biomarker, just blocking one single biomarker is not sufficient. When you can identify multiple in that pathway, lock them in concert at the same time. And then you're blocking the propagation of disease. And that's how it works. And the trend of biomarker development is not looking for single biomarker, it's looking for a panel biomarker. And this involves an area much more involved, it's called system biology, trying to understand the pathway. This is the next step. And the health system, of course, this is not just a technology issue. You know, medicine never be a technology issue, right? It's a social issue. So how the physician acceptance is important. Understanding the importance, the IVD is important, and how you position IVD into the healthcare. Right now, if you look at the IVD business, it's 0.01% of total healthcare. It's very small. Is that so? I mean, the question is, how you think about this piece of technology, how important in terms of our, if we talk about personal medicine, talk about preventive care, and then IVD is one of the strategies you can use to realize that, and how you integrate it. All these issues need to work it through. It's more than a technology issue. And this is the major barrier when people talk about proteomic biomarkers, the algorithm itself. And this is the so-called my radiology part come out of it, right? So this is the tissue about fruit. You talk about in vitro, the question is validation by in vivo. And one thing about, we know that when things take out the body, the microenvironment changed. So it may not be as natural as the whole disease. The question is, can you actually test the biomarker why it's still inside your body? That's what you want, because that's the real thing. It's no hiding. And the area of the in vivo medical imaging is exactly doing this thing. The whole field, whole direction of the radiology imaging is really able to look at the molecular signature in vivo. And there are many approaches to do that. One thing is you can identify the biomarkers, and then you can conjugate certain chemistry probe, and then using MLCT to light it up. And this is not a so-called a blue sky story. This has been around, this field has been around molecular imaging radiology. So in the last, since 1994, it's first funded grant by NCI, progressing very well, and the whole direction is going to that area. So one possibility is to validation of biomarkers, not by in vitro assay. Actually, validation directly in the in vivo system when the disease occurs, when the environment is there. So you know what you're seeing is a real thing. And the whole molecular medical imaging, in vivo one, is one of the strategies we are talking about. One of the way to do it. And this is one example using APP antibodies. You look at the spec, you can light up. When you light up, you know it exists in the environment. You don't make an assumption. And the whole approach is doing this is basically is you have a target, right? Your biomarker target. You have a ligand, and your ligand attached to the target. Your ligand can, at the back, you attach a so-called payload. There can be a radio label, can be a radio tracer, can be a fluorescent label, can even be a drug, frankly. Once you can zoom in the tumor site, and then you have marked the target, link it to there, you can using traditional MRI, CT, depend what is the label, the payload at the back, right? It can be semi-parametric, then use MRI, can be a radio tracer, then using PET or SPECT, depend on the payload attached to this ligand. But the more important thing is think about is when you can diagnose, you can attach it, you might as well deliver drug locally. So it can be a prodrug or even a drug. And you can activate from in vivo at the same time. That means you can using external energy, you can using ultrasound or using light to heat it up to release the drug locally, since already attached to the tumor site. Remember, a lot of drugs not effective, not because the farmers do a lousy job. It's because by the time we take it into our body, only probably 0.1% reach the target. The localized drug delivery and molecular imaging with good biomarkers can deliver you that right on the spot. Right? And then you can, once you can write the spot, you can apply many techniques to do it, right? You can using heat. I can using remote control drug concept, basically. I using heat from outside externally to heat up the drug and move the drug from one place to the other. I can control it that way. It's all possible. And this is the approach of the area of the molecular imaging. And this is really about a drug development and about therapeutic monitoring. So think outside more than diagnostic. If you can do this type of thing, I call it theranostic, people call it. You're really combining diagnostic and therapy in one place, in one go. In a way, you see the patients, you see the problem, you treat the problem at the same time. It's a see and treat paradigm, which shortens the whole medical care cycle. Instead of going back right now, the step timeline, see the patient, take the tissue, do pathology study, go back in, do a surgery, if not, come back, do again. The whole idea is you want to see the patient, see the problem, treat the patient at the same time while the patient is still on the operating table or even on the scanner. And this is the approach of integration. And this is the paradigm we are doing right now at Methodist. We're still doing this traditional functional genomic molecular diagnosis, do proteomic, all this study for biomarker searching. But different is, we can using molecular imaging to zoom in, to guide where I take the tissue from. It's called targeted proteomic, right? The imaging, I top-down imaging, I can see, for example, this is some tumor area, or this is light up area. I can needle guide the 3D image. I can guide needle in, take the biopsy. I know exactly which spot I take the tissue from. I don't guess, right? I can take a good tissue, bad tissue, different region tissue, and come back and do the study to verify my biomarkers. This approach is give a better iterations than before. This is how we saw integrating functional genomic proteomic approach with in vivo imaging together to find better validation of biomarkers. And I think these are all doable. It's just a matter of where people are willing to go across different boundary, departmental boundary to work together. And that's how we, at Methodist right now, pathology and radiology department, we actually work together in solving this type of problem. That will give you a much better biomarker than currently just either using in vitro assay approach or in vivo assay approach. Combine those together, iteration, you get a convergent solution. So, anyway, so this is the end of my talk. Conclusion is, I think I show you, at least hope to show you some picture, but the picture doesn't show up, but the concept is there. The algorithm, mathematics, actually, bioinformatics algorithm, play a very key role, a key function in the proteomic biomarkers. In fact, for all high throughput biomarkers today in the post-genomic era, either genomic, proteomic, the problem is they give, today it's so easy to generate tons of data using automations. And people never think about the quality of the data. So you need a very good filtering algorithm to able to detect, deloise, and normalize this data into something useful. So bioinformatics is very important. And I mentioned to you, right now there's really a big gap between discovery of biomarkers and validation of biomarker. And you show in FDA result, right? For the last 2 decades, we got 0 approved. One biomarker per year, which is not even proteomic. I mean, this is not very glorified result to go home about. You know what I mean? There's something wrong with our approach. So the validation of biomarker, what I proposed in this talk is really, can we think about changing the concept from in vitro to in vivo? And this is the approach that is sort of mindset changed. We evaluate the biomarker in the in vivo system and go back to the in vitro to further to confirm it again. That's how we mix the two together. And at the end, diagnostic medicine is not purely technology, right? It's involving science, technology, and policy challenge. And you can take forever to talk about these topics. We all know that. So these, I'm telling you today, just one angle from a technological, from scientific point of view, what is the right approach? And how to mix it together with policy issue and technology issue is another question. To this, I end my talk. Thank you very much for your attention. Oh, sure. Data points and being able to is it a question or comment? I don't know, but I think the bioinformatics is not a magic bullet. I never believe in many magic bullet. People can give me gazillions of data. If the data quality and the experimental design is fought in the beginning, only by luck I will give you something back. I think the issue is really, as I mentioned early on, is we should look at the whole thing in the beginning, in the data acquisition side, before looking at the bioinformatics. That's my angle to it. In a sense that, there's a story about in Texas, there's something called Texas Blue Eyes. What I learned is, if you have a dot, I throw in the wall, and then I have a lot of data, I can start drawing all these around the dot, I always hit the target. Something, people always love to publish in microarray, for example. They always generate something. When you have a lot of data, I can always give you something back, believe me, it's proven already. So the issue is, the nature of the data, the quality of the data, is it makes sense to generate them in the beginning, before you talk about bioinformatics. Now, if you have a good data set, I can tell you bioinformatics is the easy part. It's not that difficult. The hard part, I think, is still in the data generation side. For example, I give you, this is a very simple example I give in proteomics today, right? The data is already generated, right? People hand it over to people, right? I generate a whole bunch of data for mass spec, give it to you, right? And bioinformatics can always give you some data back. And today, we got zero approved by FDA. We know that what's the reason, right? If you go through the whole workflow, there are many steps. And a lot of people doing bioinformatic analysis, they don't even know what are the steps involved in order to get rid of noise, normalization, all these kind of things, right? The nature is, I think bioinformatics is I look at it as an easy part of the whole puzzle. The hard part is really experimental design and a good, consistent generation of equipment. That's my angle. I may be wrong, but this is different experiences. We generate a lot of data, we integrate a lot of data, and as people know in the early 80s or 70s when computers coming out, everybody programming knows that garbage in, garbage out. And depends what sort of data coming in, and then you generate what quality of data. It's the same thing today. In this genomic era, we have a whole bunch of high throughput genomic proteomic data coming in, and we won't get quality data out. And make sure that we have good quality of high content proteomic genomic data first place. Otherwise, we can never get to the good quality biomarker, which the results show in FDA approved result. We have been doing that in the last 2 decades. When NIH has a good time, everybody just keep zooming in, and pharma keep generating all these genomic machines, all these things, results. The pipeline is dry. So I think it's the integration of bioinformatics will be the second part of the problem. I think I would rather think the right set of experimental design to the biomarkers you want to ask. For example, I show my philosophy is, I think using in vitro assay to verify in vitro result is not as good as using in vivo imaging to see the thing actually happening in the in vivo body, which is much more convincing, right? This is a new mindset. That means require people to think about how to do the validation of biomarkers. Yeah. I don't know if I answered your question, but this is a different philosophy. Yeah.